This is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated June 10th, 2016. It's about 2 o'clock. We'll start today's reading on the front page with a local story. Illinois Raptor Center nest cues reunite bird families. Decatur. Baby birds sometimes fall out of their nest, or the nest is blown down in a storm, or someone cut down a tree. In those cases, wildlife rescuers would much prefer to find a way to give the baby back to its parents. In the old days, we took the orphans in, and we still do if the case calls for it. But in our field, there's a thing they called re-nesting, said Jacques Nuzzo, program director for the Illinois Raptor Center. I call it nescue. Nest rescue. I invented the word. When Macon County Animal Control brought Nuzzo, a baby barred owl, a couple weeks ago, Nuzzo checked the baby over to make sure it wasn't injured or ill. We could keep him in the center, Nuzzo said, but none of our barred owls are good surrogate parents. We don't want to hand-raise them. They'll imprint on their human caretakers, and then we can't let them go. One barred owl chick is also very expensive for the center, costing about $500 to feed until it's old enough to take care of itself, he said. Thanks to Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, who build nest boxes for the center as scouting projects, Nuzzo has a supply of boxes and can modify them for any kind of bird. We can put the box up and put the chick in and set up a couple of trail cameras to verify that the parents are coming back and forth. And a few days later, we have gorgeous footage, Nuzzo said. The neat thing about the trail cameras is it enlightens you. I've always thought I was a good owl mama, but I'm just not. The owl parents bring much more varied diet than the center could possibly provide, he said. And during storms, the owls just sit and get wet and then preen afterwards. That sort of thing is what they need to do to thrive. As of last week, Nuzzo said that they've put 25 baby birds back. Climbing equipment, harnesses, ropes, and cameras cost about $3,000, but they've saved more than that with not having to feed lost babies. Nuzzo's been a tree climber for more than 18 years recreationally, and those skills come in handy for nescues, but he cautioned that such activity is not for the untrained. He is trained and has specialized equipment. Warden Patrick Cook answered the call when the resident found the baby barred owl on the road in rural Macon County along the Sangamon River, and Cook said the owl's eyes weren't even open yet. The person who called thought it was injured, Cook said, and I realized it was just a really young owl. Animal Control always takes birds to the Illinois Raptor Center, and the next day Cook showed Nuzzo where the baby'd been found, which helped Nuzzo pinpoint where to look for the nesting site. Because he couldn't locate any other chicks, and because barred owls typically have two, when another facility sent the Raptor Center an unrelated barred owl chick who is about the same size as this one, Nuzzo decided to put it in the nest box, too. So far, so good. The parents are taking care of them. The parents have been there watching me every time I've been up and have not expressed any concern for me being there, Nuzzo said. On May 22nd, he retrieved the trail camera that he had to keep tabs that he's had to keep tabs on the owls, and the parents have begun bringing food but not feeding the babies, so they have to learn to eat on their own, Nuzzo said. This is the first time he's gotten that on video, and he's excited by that. We've got great documentation that our modified box design works, he said. The chicks both fledged into the roof like it was designed to do another successful nescue in the bag. Donations are always welcome and needed, he said, and the center is working on a sponsor a box idea. They'd also like to upgrade the cameras to Wi-Fi so that they can watch the nests in real time. Wapella grads keep classmates' memory close, class of 91 raising funds for her once more. It's been 30 years since Jennifer Lynn Carr played volleyball or joked around with her junior high classmates in the former Wapella grade school. Even so, they haven't forgotten her. When she laughed, everyone laughed, said Debbie Wilson, 42. She was smart, loved to be goofy, and she was just so full of life. So beloved was she that her battle against leukemia in eighth grade, one ending in her death on April 24, 1987, drew the 20-some members of her class closer than most. They organized several benefits for her and her family that year, and since they graduated from high school in 1991, have included Jenny in many class reunions by taking a group photograph at her grave in Long Point Cemetery. This Saturday, the Wapella High School class of 91 plans to celebrate its 25th reunion, in part with a memorial 5K walk run to raise money for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Jennifer's name. Dubbed Jogging for Jenny, the event has evolved since classmate Jennifer Two Hill Daneman came up with the idea of during a reunion planning meeting in February. It's already attracted more than 100 t-shirt and tank top sales and more than 60 commitments on Facebook to attend. It will also include a bake sale, a raffle of a special carriage ride being donated by Rick Sullivan, and a Dippin' Dots sale by Jay's Dance Studio in Hayworth. Wilson said that the class hopes the walk run will become an annual event and a platform for a festival in Wapella, a DeWitt County community of 550, that hasn't had an operating school since the village became part of the Clinton School District in 1994. Members of Jennifer's family say they are touched and plan to come out in force. Her parents, Carla and Dave Carr of Wapella, will be there, along with many of his brothers and sisters and their extended families. Among all those aunts and uncles is Amy Roof of Decatur, who finds the story of her niece's small-town class very moving. They visited her at home when she was too sick to attend school and dedicated their entire eighth grade year to praying for her, raising funds for her and keeping her smiling, Ruth said. That they remember and cherish their time with her is remarkable. If you go, it's a Jogging for Jenny 5K walk run in memory of Jennifer Lynn Carr. It's at 10 a.m. Saturday, June 11th, where at Wapella Park. Entry fees are $10 per person, $30 for a family of four or more. The benefit? Proceeds benefit St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee. For more information, email Debbie Wilson at BEEDORA73, that's BDORA73@gmail.com, or find the event on Facebook. In government and politics, county paves way for road projects for wind turbines. Decatur. The pathway toward Macon County's proposed wind farm will begin with some road work. An agreement between the county and Twin Forks Wind Farm, the subsidiary of German-based power company E.ON, will oversee the plan and was unanimously approved Thursday night by the county board. With the agreement in place, work is expected to begin this summer on the roads around the area where 139 wind turbines are expected to be erected across 24,000 acres near Maroa and Warrensburg. According to the agreement, Twin Forks would cover the cost of materials and laborers to work on the more than dozen miles of road in the area of the project. The Macon County Highway Department will be responsible for issuing permits and must give approval for specific parts of the construction. Upgrades to the roads are required before work can be done on the turbines. According to the agreement, among the work that needs to be done on the roads is strengthening them to allow for heavy loads, widening of lane corners for trucks, and installation of cabling and utility boxes. Before construction can begin, Twin Forks is responsible for an impact analysis to provide a step-by-step plan for construction and subsequent effect on the area, as well as to mark the areas where underground cables will be placed. The cost of the project is not provided in the agreement, as bids remain to be sent out to contractors, subcontractors, and material suppliers. Once everything is in line, the hope is that the work can be done within 90 days, said Patty Cox, chairwoman of the county's transportation committee. Road work is expected to be done despite a lawsuit against the county by residents who live near the proposed wind farm location. Arguments are set to be heard in that case June 22nd in the Macon County Court's facility. In other business, the board approved a memorandum of understanding among the Federal Highway Administration, Illinois Department of Transportation, Macon County, and the Illinois State Historical Preservation Officer that would investigate sites of potential historical relevance. The memorandum would allow additional archaeological surveys and test excavations, on 9 archaeological sites that represent historic Native American and Euro-American to determine whether the site could be eligible for National Register of Historic Sites. If any sites are deemed eligible, the multiple agencies would then attempt to avoid and minimize potential impact. If impact cannot be avoided, then a data recovery excavation would be conducted by IDOT. The locations identified consist of old farmhouses and homes, with Board Chairman Kevin Greenfield saying after the meeting that the hope was further investigations would not greatly impact the Beltway project. The timing of the work is tied to receiving grant money for the Beltway, which Greenfield and Cox said the county is still awaiting word on whether they will receive the money, and if they do receive it, when. Officials have said the study is one of the last steps to be taken before construction can begin. In education, Camp Discovery Kites, a breeze for kids, Decatur. Kites can be therapeutic. Kids at Camp Discovery on Thursday learned to make kites and then took them outside to fly them as one way to answer the question, why should we make healthy life choices? That is the theme of this year's Decatur School District summer session. We made kites to relieve stress and to help with our mental health, said Hayden Giles, 14. Last year our theme was tornadoes, said Nick Spanos, 12. We made safety kits and stuff. This year it's about how to make more healthy lifestyle choices and how to remove stress like this, like flying a kite. Kites relieve stress because it gives you something creative to focus on, Hayden said, and problems to solve that you can solve. It gets your mind off stuff, Nick added, and you stop thinking about what you're stressed out about because your mind is on the project at hand. A good number of students had never flown a kite before, said camp coordinator Diane Brandt. So it was all new to them. The point of making a kite instead of using commercially produced kites was that it unleashed their creativity. So many times adults are telling kids what to do and to color inside the lines, said Rebecca Kern, camp facilitator. This was not the case with the kites. The kids decorated their kites any way they wanted to, in any color and shape that occurred to them. Jaden Trossel's kite was dubbed the Dorito kite. It ended up the shape of a chip, Jaden said with a chuckle. Everybody said it looked like a Dorito. So I said, let's color it orange. During the four-week camp, each week will have a focus, and this week is mental health. The next three will be physical, emotional, and social health, Brandt said. The students will learn ways to improve their health in all those areas. So many times kids think health is all about food and what they eat, she said. They think if they eat fruits and vegetables, they're healthy. But health is also about outlook, exercise, and coping skills, and so much more, she said. The hope is that by the end of the camp, the kids will have a much better idea and habits for good lifelong health. In state and regional, Red Cross names Lynn Ruska, regional CEO, Bloomington. The American Red Cross in Central and Southern Illinois plans to build its volunteer base under a new CEO who is a familiar face to McLean County. Lynn Ruska is the new CEO of the American Red Cross Central and Southern Illinois region, meaning she will oversee Red Cross operations over 3 Red Cross chapters serving 78 counties in Illinois and part of Missouri and Iowa. Ruska has also been named executive director for one of those chapters, American Red Cross Central Illinois. That means she's responsible for daily operations in 16 counties, including McLean, Livingston, Logan, Tazewell, Woodford, DeWitt, Piatt, Ford, and Marshall. Huresca is replacing Betsy Pratt of the Quad City Area Chapter, who is transitioning to another Red Cross position. Red Cross announced Huresca's appointment Monday. They will take effect June 27th. We will return to our roots by focusing on building a volunteer workforce, expanding our community presence, enhancing our service delivery, and building on our fundraising successes, Huresca told the Bloomington Pantograph. Huresca, 57, of rural Normal, has been with the Red Cross for 19 years. For 16 years, she was executive director of the Bloomington-based American Red Cross of the Heartland. For the past 24 years, she's been chief development officer for the Red Cross Central and Southern Illinois region. The Heartland chapter and the Peoria-based Central Illinois chapter merged 2 years ago. Colleen Moore, who replaced Huresca as executive director of the Heartland chapter and later transitioned into major gifts officer, remains in that position, reporting to Huresca. The Red Cross Central and Southern Illinois region serves 3 million people with 30 employees and more than 2,000 volunteers. Lynn's leadership skills, experience, and the deep commitment to the mission of the Red Cross made her the obvious choice to step in to the regional CEO role. Excuse me. Dawn Bozeman, chairwoman of the Red Cross Central and Southern Illinois Region Board, said. Lynn's passion for the Red Cross and her management style are going to build on the strong foundation of the Central Illinois, Southern Illinois region, she added. Local briefs for 610. Rock Springs Road. City crews will be repairing a water main in the 1800 block of West Rock Springs Road at Taylorville Road and North Fork Southern Corporation Railroad crossing until about 3 p.m. today. West Rock Springs Road will be reduced to one-lane traffic during that time. Bement. Old Glory Festival. The Old Glory Festival will be Saturday, June 11th in the Village Park, beginning with a 5K run walk at 7:30 a.m. Other events include a petting zoo, stagecoach and camel rides, contests, performances, presentations, live music, contests, car show, food, and a salute to Old Glory program at noon. For a complete schedule of events, visit www.bement.com. Decatur Youth Band. The Greater Decatur Youth Band will begin its 22nd season Monday, June 13th. The band is for students who play wind, brass, and percussion instruments in grades 4 through 9 and will rehearse Monday and Wednesday mornings at Kirkland Fine Arts Center, room 136 on Millikan University campus. Current 4th through 6th grade students will play in the Red Band, meeting 9 to 10:15 a.m. Students in grades 7th through 9th will play in the Blue Band, 10:30 to 11:45 a.m. Students going into grades 10 and 11 can participate at no charge as interns and assist teachers. Email Gary Shaw at gshaw@millikan.edu for information. That's gshaw@millikan.edu. Registration is available from school band directors and from the Decatur Park District. That's at 217-422-5911. That's 422-5911. A limited number of scholarships are available. Decatur 5K Glow Run Walk. The Decatur Earth Mover Credit Union 5K Glow Run Walk will begin at 8 p.m. Saturday, June 11th in Forsyth Park. The cost is $25 per person. Packet pickup is 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. today at Earth Mover Credit Union, 260 West Marion Avenue, Forsyth. Registration forms are available at all Earth Mover. Locations are 1 hour before the event starts in Forsyth Park. Proceeds will benefit Child First Center. Harristown, Sangamon Songbirds. Friends of Lincoln Homestead State Park and Memorial will host a Songbird Along the Sangamon event from 2 to 4 p.m. Saturday, June 11th, at the park, about 10 miles west of Decatur. The group will follow that up with a Restoration Action Day to spruce up the park from 9 a.m. to noon at Saturday, June 18th. For more information, find the group on Facebook or call Judy Parrish. That's at 217-433-7893. That's 433-7893. Taproot Benefit. Macon County Sheriff's Office Fraternal Order of Police Benevolent 144 will be hosting its 10th annual Trap Shoot fundraiser from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday, June 11th, at the Warrensburg Gun Club, 6289 North Glasgow Road. Pulled pork dinners will be available from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for $5. Each year, the Sheriff's Office hosts this trap shoot and invites members of the law enforcement, first responders, and military from throughout the Midwest. Money from the benefit goes toward many community events that the group either makes donations to or hosts. Decatur, paper shredding offered. The Office of State Representative Sue Shearer, Decatur, Democrat of Decatur, in partnership with the Decatur Audubon Society, will host a Shred Day from 9 a.m. to noon Saturday, June 11th, at Shearer's Decatur office, 1301 East Mound Road. A mobile shredding truck will be available for residents to shred and recycle personal documents free of charge. There is a limit of 2 bags or boxes per car, and residents are asked to remove all staples and paper clips. In addition to documents, donations of old eyeglasses, cell phones, and tattered American flags will also be accepted to be delivered to area charities. For more information, contact Shearer's Constituent Service Office at 217-877-9636. That's 877-9636, or email staterepsue@gmail.com. That's staterepsue@gmail.com. Fans for the Elderly. The Macon County Senior Center is helping low-income elderly residents stay cool with the annual fan drive. Drop off a fan at the WAND-TV tent between 7 a.m. and 1 p.m. Thursday, June 16th, at Walmart's Northside location. In government and politics, from schools to roads, fallout of Illinois budget feud grows. Chicago. The consequences of Illinois lawmakers' epic failure to approve a state budget continue to pile up, with new warnings about unfunded 911 call centers and schools, thousands of road construction jobs in jeopardy, and the long-term cost to taxpayers growing by the billions. Yet the political sniping between Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and Democrats who run the legislature hasn't changed. Each side blames the other, and neither appears willing to budge. The only state without a budget for the fiscal year that ends this month, Illinois is on the brink of entering a record second year without a plan if lawmakers can't reach a deal by July 1st. A group of business leaders warned Thursday that lack of action will put at risk nearly $2 billion in summer road and bridge construction projects and 25,000 jobs. The state has seen the percentage of roads rated as being in acceptable condition dip below 80% for the first time. 79% have that rating, which state transportation officials say means drivable but in need of an upgrade. We think that roads are already ragged now, and citizens across the state are going to realize, that their road system is crumbling if we lose an entire construction season, said Todd Meisch, president of the Illinois Chamber and co-chairman of the Transportation for Illinois Coalition. And Comptroller Leslie Munger cautioned Thursday that her office's authority to write checks for $23 billion that state leaders managed to agree on since last summer will expire July 1st. Money for things such as K-12 education, higher education grants, and some payouts to lottery members. Plus, Moody's Investors Service downgraded Illinois already worst in the nation rating, to two levels above junk status with a negative outlook, citing the ongoing political gridlock. The ratings agency noted Illinois bill backlog is likely to exceed a previous high of $10 billion in coming months. That downgrade increases taxpayers' share of future state borrowing and comes 1 week before Rauner's administration is set to sell $550 million in bonds. Meanwhile, Rauner and Illinois top Democrats House Speaker Michael Madigan and Senate President John Cullerton have been unable to agree on either a full-year budget or a stopgap measure to ensure schools stay open and government operations such as prisons and veterans' homes are run consistently. The Republican governor insists that any long-term spending plan, which is likely to include a Rauner-sanctioned tax increase, must be accompanied by business-friendly legislation that he believes will improve Illinois' economy. Democrats argue his priorities, which include weakening labor unions and cutting the cost of workers' compensation insurance, will hurt the middle class. And even as bipartisan groups of rank-and-file lawmakers, with the blessing of legislative leaders in Rauner, have been meeting to try and craft a solution, the governor and Madigan indicated Thursday peace is far from imminent. Rauner spokeswoman Catherine Kelly blamed the credit downgrade on Madigan and rank-and-file Democrats who blindly followed the speaker. Hours later, Madigan issued a statement calling the ongoing impasse an outrage. This downgrade is directly attributable to Governor Rauner's reckless decision to hold the state hostage for more than a year and to create the crisis he desired. In Chicago, hundreds of students and parents crowded outside the downtown building where state elected officials, including Rauner, have offices to call for more funding and a change to the way Illinois distributes money to schools. We want Governor Rauner, Speaker Madigan, and Senate President Cullerton to come together and to lead, said Natalie Naris, whose daughter attends city schools. We want them to lead with a sense of urgency, she said. On Biz, Salsa American Burrito Company, Cheddar's Casual Cafe, and Dollar General. A type of fast casual burrito restaurant many Decatur diners have been craving has arrived. Salsa American Burrito Company opened earlier this week in a renovated building at 2805 North Main Street, which most recently was Mancino's Pizza. The remodeling work started earlier this year and stayed on schedule to open as planned. Salsa expands the number of possibilities that can be included in a burrito, providing an American twist to its concept. The menu includes burritos, tacos, salads, nachos, loaded mac, smothered tots, and chips and dips that are prepared fresh and built for each customer. Meals can be created uniquely from the choices of fresh toppings and sauces. The owners of the restaurant are Paco and Ryan Greenwell, who operate Paco's Soul Bistro in downtown Decatur. Paco Greenwell said the goal is to provide customers with similar quality products in different settings, as he doesn't see the two restaurants competing with each other, with each being operated separately. He said they would consider another location for Salsa if all goes well. It's part of a concept Greenwell has long been interested in, but didn't move ahead until now as the plans have come together. Food can be carried out or spaces available for dine-in. Hours are 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday. More information is available at www.salsaburritos.com or on Facebook or call 217-330-6309. That's 330-6309. The owner of Cheddar's Casual Cafe in Forsyth has changed. The new owner is Kevin Wong, who purchased the restaurant at 1340 Hickory Point Drive from Roy Mosser. Mosser has owned the business for almost 22 years. During this time, Mosser said Cheddar's has served almost 5 million meals. Wong will bring with him a combined 25 years in the restaurant industry, including 8 years as an owner, Mosser said. With Kevin's background, experience, and enthusiasm, he's an ideal new owner franchise. Cheddar's is open 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Friday through Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated 6/10/2016. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.